Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
He's in the house. It's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guy, Brett White, and I'm also a senior reporter producer for Decider.com and a drag queen named Barb Hardley. And why not say hello to the Stella to my Ames, Ethan K. Hello, Ethan.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, oh, wow. Brett. Hey, Brett.
I'm calling myself a killer.
Well, yes. today you are Brett, but deep inside you are Barb.
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I have spent the entire day building IKEA furniture, and so I did not feel like getting into drag. And I really honestly feel bad because of who we're talking about today. I feel like I'm not honoring his memory.
When you said Stella to your Ames, 0% of the people who listen to this podcast know who any of those characters are, because we're doing an episode of a non-sitcom TV series. It is most definitely not a comedy.
No, not a... this is part of our Pride Month celebration, where we're examining depictions of queer, gender non-conforming individuals throughout the decades. Last week we saw Rock Hudson for like 30 seconds on an episode of I Love Lucy. That was good. And this week we're going to be teaching everybody about the life of one Thomas Craig Jones, aka TC Jones, aka fierce female impersonator that I'm fascinated by and have done a lot of research in the last 2 hours.
The episode we're watching is from the Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which is the sequel of sorts to the Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Alfred Hitchcock Presents was a regular 22-minute anthology show, and then they said, let's boost it up to 50-some minutes, and then it became the Alfred Hitchcock Hour. To keep in mind, Alfred Hitchcock did not write every episode. He did not direct every episode. He hosted every episode.
But he told jokes before everyone began. And it's very strange.
And that was interesting because the jokes that he told in the United States were usually at the expense of the sponsors or the commercials that were very popular. But he'd record a second set for the European audiences where he'd make fun of Americans.
Oh, wow. Got to give everybody what they want. Unless you are a female lead in any of his movies, then you're not going to get anything you want. You're probably going to get a lot of verbal abuse.
As soon as I told my mom that we're going to be doing this episode, she goes, oh, I just read a biography of him and he's not a nice man.
No, so, no, he's not. No.
You know what? He had less screen time, I think, than a cat in this episode. So
Gus, you know, Gus, the new mascot of this podcast, honestly.
Gus the cat.
So honestly, I have too much to say about TC Jones that I would just say right now I am watching. We both watched Across the Spider-Verse and it's great.
Yeah.
And boom, check it off.
It was fantastic. I want to keep calling it future Academy Award nominee Across the Spider-Verse because until it becomes,
I think you could say winner Academy because Award. I don't think the Pixar Elemental or whatever is getting anywhere near as good a critical buzz.
No.
And no. Also Across the Spider-Verse was just I can like casually say a perfect movie, like just pretty wild.
They took something that was perfect and made it more perfect. And I don't know how that's possible.
But it is very fantastic movie. It's very Empire Strikes Back. Like, it is. Oh my God, Siri, yeah. Jesus Christ. How did you turn on for that? Go away. How do I just disable Siri?
What kind
Siri
of TV
forever?
Are you watching that you like?
I don't care if you got it. Stop. It will never in my life use that. Okay.
I want to know, what kind of TV are you watching?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Sorry. Siri activated again because I turned it on because I was trying to kill it. Go away, Siri. Go away.
Siri, go away.
Okay, hi.
Just don't say the H-E-Y word before it, and then that's the problem that I always have.
I just need to disable it. Anyway, we do have one comment to read from YouTube, which, you know, if you email us, leave us reviews, do anything, I will, and if it's nice, or if it's mean, but in an over-the-top, you're clueless kind of way, then I'll read that. But our friend Jason Van Slick on YouTube commented that he's always looking forward to new MHS TV episodes. I come for the discussions on television, but I stay for the looks Barb brings and Ethan's t-shirt game, 13th floor elevators, hometown heroes of San Antonio. Thanks for the podcast. I'm loving it. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. Thank you.
Well, thank you. 13th floor elevators are... For a while, they were my favorite band. I think they might have been supplanted by the Replacements, but I did get to see them at the first Levitation Festival. They reunited, and then Rocky Erickson unfortunately passed away. Ooh. But Megan and I did get to see him do a solo show. Not solo, I mean, he has his band, but we did get to see him do a show in Brooklyn, I want to say about a year or so before he passed away, and so right now I'm wearing the great Vincent Price because we're doing something.
This is creepy.
Hitchcock's not horror. He's suspense.
Yeah.
And I think there's a definite difference between that.
Although he did, you know, arguably invent the slasher, depending on if you think Psycho invented it or Black Christmas or Texas Chainsaw or Halloween. Like, I think those are all
I think it was Psycho.
Okay.
I think it was Psycho.
Literally slashing.
First time that a toilet was seen in a movie.
Uh-huh. Hell yeah, toilets. Psycho has... Yeah, we'll be talking about Psycho in a bit because the house was used in this episode. But...
I've always felt that... Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No,
we're going to rock and roll.
This week, we are traveling to February 15th, 1965. The greatest story ever told ruled the box office. This Diamond Ring by Gary Lewis and the Playboys. I thought it was Pacemakers.
No, that was Jerry and the Pacemakers. Gary Lewis and the Playboys. Gary Lewis was the son of Jerry Lewis.
Oh.
Who you know, paid to make his son a star.
Oh, and well, isn't it wild how this Diamond Ring is better than anything Jerry Lee Lewis? That's a different... Wait, oh, you weren't
Jerry
talking
Lee
about...
Lewis?
You were talking about
no,
Great
I'm
Balls
talking
of
about
Fire.
Jerry Lewis, the lady.
Ladies, right, okay.
Martin and Lewis. I gotta say, I've tried to watch In the Army Now, or is it At War with the Army, like three times, and I cannot get through it.
In the Army Now is a Pauly Shore movie.
At War with the Army, because it was, that movie, At War with the Army, was written by James Allardyce, who also wrote the introduction to all of the Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Alfred Hitchcock Hour episodes. That's where it was coming back. It all links together. Hexagons.
Well, I mean, my point is that this Diamond Ring is a great song. It is a good, just generic 60s pop rock song. But it was number one at the time.
He had a couple fun songs.
NBC.
Which Keith Moon covered very badly.
And NBC aired the Alfred Hitchcock Hour episode, An Unlocked Window. Ethan, you must have seen An Unlocked Window before today.
No, I have not seen An Unlocked Window before today.
I did watch Alfred Hitchcock a lot as a kid because it was on Nick at Night when I was growing up, and I would at least watch the opening with Alfred Hitchcock. I like the part where he walked into his own fat silhouette.
Which he drew.
It's not derogatory or nothing. It's the whole thing
He even starts this episode by saying, I was afraid to come on screen because I had lost so much weight that I was afraid they'd put a missing persons report out for it.
He or like if I'd lost 10 more pounds, it would have qualified for a missing persons report or something. Yeah, but I mean, this would come on Nick at Night, but it would come on Nick at Night after my bedtime. So I knew that like when Alfred Hitchcock Presents is coming on, it's like, oh, man, it's a weekend. Oh, I'm staying,
you're staying up.
Oh, boy. I know. I truly do not think that I had the attention span to actually watch any of these episodes beyond his introductions.
You might have been okay with Presents because that was about 22. That was a half hour episode.
Yeah.
You know, with sponsors. The hour is a bit much. And I keep saying like it falls into the same trap that the Twilight Zone did. That reading a recap of a Twilight Zone episode is usually better than watching the full episode. Because it gets to the point faster. You don't have kind of like pointless scenes of, well, in this case, kind of like threading or things that don't really carry the plot far.
So,
half an hour, thumbs up, but I understand why it's an hour because you want to make it, you know, a kind of a
more
an
money
event,
right?
Thing.
Oh, or that, yeah. Event, yeah. More money, sponsors wanting more of that Hitchcock action. It is just wild that for 10 years, the most successful or influential director on the planet at the time was just on TV every week. That's crazy. What happened?
Think about it this way, though. Walt Disney was probably the number one children's family movie producer in the world. He was, and he still had a weekly show.
It is crazy that it's not, like it's Hitchcock and Disney, and it's like you can't get further apart. Yeah. And they're the two that were like, but it's like Steven Spielberg had amazing stories, but he wasn't introducing it. And that only ran for like 1 year.
Yeah. Yeah. And whereas Hitchcock, there were three seasons of the first series, three seasons of the second series. Disney went back and forth between like Wonderful World of Color and Disneyland and, you know, just all the different things he did. He was on TV pretty much from the early 1950s until his death.
Yeah.
He just constantly had shows. And some of those, I don't want to talk too much about it, but some of those were brief introductions like Hitchcock. And other ones were there when he introduced Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Mm-hmm. They filmed an entire sketch series where he went over to Ireland and he talked to historians and he met the King Bryant. Like there was like a whole.
I'm glad Darby O'Gill. I'm glad that they got the royal treatment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good film. Sean Connery's in it.
But yeah, I mean, this week on Must Have Seen TV, we'll be talking about the Alfred Hitchcock Hour episode in Unlocked Window. It's the 17th episode of either season 10 or 3, depending on whether or not you count Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Alfred Hitchcock Hour as one or two separate shows. I would say they're the same. They're just time length. It was written by James Bridges and directed by Joseph M. Newman. And here's how Peacock describes the episode. Police suspect that an insane medical student murdered three nurses. Ethan, how accurate is that description?
Not very, because they don't assume that he's a medical student. No, nowhere through the episode do they say, we think it's the medical student. Nowhere. Zero. Yeah, zip.
And also just like police suspecting implies that there are police in this episode, which I think there notably are not, except for the one scene after they find a body.
There is. This was also based on a story by Ethel Linda White. Mm-hmm. Maybe related to you, maybe not. I don't know. She also had passed away 20 years before this episode aired. So this was based on a much older story.
I mean, so in terms of talking about this, do you want to, like you were saying with Twilight Zone episodes, it's, you know, just do a quick summation. Do you want to just sum up what the whole thing is? Then we can just get into the nitty gritty. Cause like,
So it's an hour long. So, you know, usually we don't do an hour long episode.
I'm more interested in T.C. Jones. But so the whole thing is it opens up with a nurse is killed because there's a serial killer who is killing nurses, which, as I learned, in the, well, this was based on a story written in the 30s, but I'm assuming this was still a case in like the 60s. But he's specifically targeting.
I was just going to say that the famous nurse murderer, Richard Speck, he killed 7 or 8 nurses in an evening, but that was 1966.
God.
So that was after this episode aired and, you know, 30 years after the short story was written.
But did he murder them in a hospital or like this one, go house to house and murder in-home nurses? Because that's even more specific than just nurses.
He didn't murder them in a hospital. I want to say they were all, he gathered them together in a room and then killed them all in the room. But one of them escaped by playing dead under a bed, and she was able to identify him by his tattoo. And he died, I want to say in the last 10 years.
I guess also maybe content little warning or whatever, because man, this is going to get dark. Sorry.
Yeah. This is not a comedy. This is not a sitcom. This is not a sitcom. This is definitely a suspense murder thing. So beware.
Yeah. So it opens up with a nurse who is gorgeous. I don't think she has any lines, but I was like, this nurse is beautiful. She's great bone structure.
A few lines. She says goodbye to the person she's taking care of a man's wife. Caliphus, I think his name is. And all she does is it was Christmas, maybe.
Okay.
I unfortunately did not write it down, but she's looking after his wife. He sees her to the door. He says, "Can I see you home?" She says, "No, I'm just down the street." So he says, "You know, be careful. There's a murderer out there." But she goes out
targeting nurses. And so all of this is being reported on the news, and we are watching two nurses in a creepy ass, I mean, the Psycho House. It's very Charles Adams in, you know, outside and inside, and it is the exterior of the Psycho House. They are watching this news report of they found the body. She'd been missing for like 3 days. And these two nurses, one is older, one is younger. Stella is the younger one. Miss Betty Ames is the older one. And they are watching over just like some rich dude who bought this house because he wanted it to be haunted. Honestly, weird character. So, I mean, there's a whole hour of, you know, suspense and like, what did I hear? What did I see? And it turns out at the very end that the killer is the older nurse, who is a female impersonator. T.C. Jones is playing this. So yeah, it's a crazy person dressed up like a nurse and kills. Stella dies. That's wild.
And that's all we knew about it going into this, is that we knew that there was a female impersonator episode of Alfred Hitchcock. If you listen to our last episode, that's literally what we said. Yeah. Oh, let's do that. It's like the Twilight Zone where you're like, she thinks that she's ugly. She gets the surgery. The surgery fails because she's beautiful and everyone else looks like ugly. You can sum up that entire episode in just one sentence.
Did you guess that the nurse was T.C. Jones right away?
Yeah, but well, for two reasons. One, I had done enough research beforehand to know who he played, you know, what he looked like. I can understand that if someone was not expecting this ending, then it would be a huge surprise.
I think he's really convincing. It's just his voice. So for the entirety of the episode, he's using his actual voice, which I think is probably naturally higher than most men, but it has like a lower resonance to it that is kind of a tell, but like only if you're kind of already like listening for it. I think otherwise very convincing.
If you know what the ending is, it kind of spoils the rest of it. because then you're just kind of like wondering,
when is it going to happen?
Wondering, yeah, like how much is this supposed to be one thing or another? There are a couple times where the voice from the killer is down like this, and he's like, mm-hmm. "Oh, I'm gonna kill you, so and so." But it's strange because there are times where that voice is heard in a room, and then someone screams, and Nurse Ames runs from a completely different side of the house to the room where the so-called killer's voice is heard.
You know,
it happens,
who knows?
I think, twice, which is strange.
So let's run through our cast of characters, because this episode, this little house is filled with, I mean, I loved this. Like, honestly, I was on board the entire hour, mainly because, like, whatever was lacking in plot, because there really isn't any plot, was more than made up for in just pure scenery chewing, especially the cook, Maude. A grade A weirdo that I am. I don't know who played her. I didn't look up any of the cast.
she was played by Louise Latham, who was one of the big stars in Hitchcock's Marnie.
Ah.
And that's where she got that connection. But she kind of transitioned away from movies and did a lot more TV kind of at this time. So the rest of her career is a lot of TV movies, a lot of TV episodes, occasional movies, but like Marnie was definitely the high point. She is all over the emotional map.
I love her. One of the very first things that she says, because like after they watch that report, the nurses go and like make sure all the windows and doors are locked, etc. They walk into the kitchen where Maude and Sam, who I guess is like the groundskeeper probably, are like hanging out in there. So now we know, like, okay,
yeah, he's kind of like the head butler. The major domo or something like
and
that.
And he's going out to get oxygen. So he's like, it leaves immediately because they're running out of oxygen for their boss. And so one of the first things, though, that Maude says after watching this news report is like, you know, I know of a man who only killed trombone players. He beat them to death with their own trombones. Amazing.
Tell me that story, Hitch.
Yeah. And then like, what? Oh, God. She also is called a champion neck ringer when it comes to, like, because she serves killing the master chicken soup. I don't want to keep calling him a master, the sick guy, her boss.
Her employer. Isn't
yeah.
It seems like, let me see, Mr. Becker.
She serves him chicken soup, and he's like, I bet you killed the chickens, too. Yeah, it's like, I'm a natural neck ringer. She's great. Yeah.
It's strange. It's a strange thing to say. Because I think they're also trying to hint that anybody could be the killers. There's definitely a victim. We know there's a victim. There's the other nurse that's not Betty Ames, T.C. Jones.
Stella.
So there are a couple scenes. Yeah, Stella. Let's call her Stella. There are a couple scenes where characters are in bizarre silhouette.
Oh,
and there are
that.
A couple of scenes where Maude is in the silhouette. And you're like, silhouette equals evil character. Maude is probably the killer. And then times where Nurse Ames is in the silhouette, and it's Nurse Ames.
It's really cool. Like at one point, the why does someone calls the house? Who calls the does one of the like the hospital calls to check in, right? Or to say, like, because Stella answers the phone and Maude's like, I'm going to go check on, you know, the boss. And she goes up to the top of the stairs, but she stops.
Yeah.
And she like lingers at the top of the TV frame on the landing in pure silhouette, while in the foreground down below, Stella's on the phone, like getting, I think the hospital called because Dr. Jones called. There's, we hear Maude say, like, we have no car. We don't, you know. You know,
yeah,
we're trapped
we can't
here.
Get out of this.
You know, it was like, you know,
Sam, the groundskeeper had the car. There's a storm also going on. It's implied that if the storm is really bad, he can't get back up. It's said a couple times that, when the road washes out, nobody can get up here, which is honestly, it's setting the stage. It's raising the stakes.
I also really did like, there is a series of like plot dominoes that are all knocked that are all kind of like knocked down simultaneously and coalesce in the ending that I find really interesting. And like, there's that call. So like Sam is gone. There's that call from the hospital to be like, are you guys okay? And then later on, there's another phone call that Ames answers, and Ames plays it off like it's the killer calling to be like, I'm coming to kill you. But really on the other end of the phone is probably, did she say who was on the other line? Cause I assumed this is the hospital calling to say like, hey, the nurse didn't show up, you know, because Ames just got there the night before. And so,
I guess it's a kind of a couple holes, because the phone keeps ringing. Ames keeps picking it up and answering, saying, leave us alone, and then hanging up. And then the phone rings again, but it's not told who this person on the phone
is. I can imagine that's probably like the police or the hospital, because as soon as they said, Ames just got here. She was sent over by the hospital. She arrived here last night. My thinking was, oh, she definitely killed whatever nurse was supposed to be going over there. And at some point, the hospital is going to call and be like, what do you mean there are two nurses there? She never showed up. You know? And so, like, it was cool. Like, they were persistently calling, and every single time it was Ames answering.
Now, the one thing that we have not talked about yet is the name of the episode, why it's called The Unlocked Window.
This is the only thing so like she goes down. Stella's,
it's
like
kind of a red herring. Let's just say that. It's a red herring.
Stella's like going around checking to make sure that everything's locked. She's like, I need to go down to the cellar. And Maude's like, I ain't going down there. She has another like, think about like someone. Oh, my cook's, my father's best friend tried to kill someone with a butcher's knife. It's just a story she offers up while Stella has a flashlight and is going down into the cellar. Awesome.
Maude is progressively getting drunker and drunker through the episode, which I think is hilarious. And she gets to a point where she's a little tipsy and you're like, oh, something's up with her. She literally takes a sip of some hidden brown alcohol and goes completely lunatic and just starts feeling like it's like stops talking coherently, just like I don't have it written down, but she's just like talking like baby talk, all because of like one drink took her from I'm feeling good at a party to I can no longer, I better she's wear iconic. A diaper because I'm gonna pee myself.
She's iconic. So she goes down in the cellar and she sees that, like, she's checking all the windows. One window is ajar, but she is distracted and goes back upstairs. Like, does she hear like a scream or something?
Light,
I can't remember.
The lights
why
go
she...
off, I think.
Oh, the right. Light... Yeah, the lights go off. And so she goes back up. And so this is like my main problem was the entire time she's constantly asked by Ames, you checked all the, she's asked at least twice, you checked all the windows, didn't you? And she has this look on her face where I could not tell if she was genuinely had forgotten about the blatantly open window or if she was like trying to keep it a secret because she would be embarrassed. She was like embarrassed that she, I don't know, didn't close it. And it isn't until the very end where we find out.
They show the window clapping open and closed in the wind
all the time,
probably like three or four times, maybe
it's
five.
Every act break, like every out to commercial and back from commercial is that cellar like little like window flap hitting.
But it's a red herring because the killer is already in there. The killer does not come through the window. If you don't know that TC Jones is the killer, you're looking at this being like, something's going to happen with the window. Why aren't they addressing the window? The window's open. That keeps opening.
At one point we see Sam. So like at the end of the episode where Ames is hiding under a stairwell, calling out as both the killer and also as herself, being like, oh, I'm here. At that point, Sam, or as we, the viewers are seeing a like, covered man is like stalking towards the house, and she sees his feet at the cellar door, and so we get a little bit of hot cellar action, but it doesn't amount to anything because it's just Sam. who gets killed and shoved behind the front door, which when Ames was like, look at that body behind the door. That was pretty. That was actually.
It was Sam.
Yeah, that was scary. I don't know.
Ames killed Sam because Sam, I know we're doing this completely out of order. Sam can't get up to the house. Sam, the car doesn't work. He approaches the house wearing a coat and hat. We don't see who he is. We just know that there's someone in a coat and hat circling this dark house in the middle of the night where it is raining. And we know there's a killer out there. So we're setting it up. This is good suspense. We're setting up this person there. And then we know that he gets in the house and Nurse Ames is screaming and Stella is very concerned. But then we reveal that Nurse Ames has killed Sam and has propped his body up behind the door. These are all the beats, folks.
Yeah,
things happen and then the murder is revealed.
Yeah, and but like the entire time there is a mounting tension. I will say, like, I thought TC Jones was great. Good female illusion. So here, let's talk about the drag for a second.
Yeah.
TC Jones is a female impersonator. So like as playing the nurse, as playing Ames, I did appreciate TC is corseted, like actually does have an hourglass figure. I'm using Bosom Buddies as like the bottom, as the floor of what TV shows consider drag, because that's just two men putting huge floor length crappy church dresses on and calling it a day.
And they didn't even bother doing drag in the second season.
Yeah, exactly. They were hardly trying in the first season. But like TC Jones has like lashes, a wig, pantyhose, the waist is snatched, you know. I was like, oh, this is like good work.
Yeah, because he was a professional.
Of course why you get TC
a professional. Yeah, I mean, he was a professional, a lot of things, professional actor, professional female impersonator, recorded an album.
Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of TC content to get to, but before we do, we need to talk about Gus.
Gus the cat.
Oh my God.
Who didn't die?
No, thank
Gus
God.
Didn't die.
So, oh no. So when Stella goes down there to check all of the windows to see if they're open, she's distracted by a mouse.
That's what it is.
Yeah,
there was
mouse
a mouse
scares her and she runs back upstairs and doesn't close that window. So Maude is like, Gus, you got to earn your keep. Picks up this just like orange. It's wild how I could tell that was an orange cat.
Yeah, you can tell it's an orange cat.
Yeah, just picks him up and just like throws him off camera, just chucks him.
But we know he's fine because as the window keeps banging later on, we see Gus climb up near the window and start eating the bait food. Did you notice this? That they had to put some food or something up there to get Gus to climb up to be by the window. So Gus climbs up, what is like a big covered chair or something, and just starts chowing down on something. And then they cut away. We had to get Gus up there.
Then he's just chilling by that window for a long time until at one point the window opens like super, like, impossibly it opens an impossible amount and Gus goes outside, and then, you know, like a scene later, all of a sudden Gus is at the second floor window and Stella lets him in, and this is what triggers her mind of like, wait, he was in the cellar, how did he, there's a cellar window open, and then she goes down there and she sees Sam's feet. But I did like that after Gus gets into his master's bedroom, he's just chilling on the bed throughout all of this, and so like Stella will run in there and be like, wake up, he's here, and the cat's just like, what the fuck are you doing? Get the fuck out of here.
Between the guy and Mr. Becker's legs.
Yeah.
It's like, my cat does that now. Monty does that. He's really taken a liking to me. Mm-hmm. So now at bedtime, he will curl up in between my legs, or now he's kind of comes up to the pillow and sleeps on the pillow on top of my head, which I love and adore. But he is doing that, like, oh, you're lying down? I'll just curl up in your crotch. It's warm.
Hell yeah.
So, like, your cats do that?
They don't stay in bed with us the entire night or off. Like, it is, it's, first of all, they have to be crepuscular for a while, which sometimes I'll wake up because they are playing soccer with a bottle of pills. That's fall that they've knocked on the floor. Wild.
Life in Brett's house.
Well, and then so like Gene, instead of like sleeping, he just gets in my face and just licks. He just licks me and will not stop. And it is a like unstoppable force. Like you can't stop him no matter what he's going. He's like, it's 4 a.m. I'm either licking your face or I'm gonna bite your phone. Like, and so then I just have to pick him up and put him out.
We've gotten better with getting the entire gang together for bedtimes. So usually it's between like 1 and 3 cats. Sometimes it's 4. Very rarely it's all 5, but it has been all 5 before.
Aw. Yeah, we'll get them all in.
Can't move.
Okay. And so
let's talk about T.C. Jones.
We can wrap up the episode because let's talk about this reveal because leads into T.C. Jones. Because I think that's pretty much right. All that's left other than me just reiterating Maude is a great character. And I do wish that Stella was better because I think Stella is kind of a non-entity. And I think that's a lot of the performance. She comes alive when she's scared.
Yeah, she and her career. Her name is Dana Winter. She did a lot of like low level movies and TV shows, but she was in the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Oh,
which is another sci-fi connection. This is directed by Joseph Newman, who was a famed assistant director, actually got nominated for best assistant director when that was still a category.
Oh, wow.
But he directed a few films and some things on TV like this, but he is famous for directing This Island Earth.
Oh, work.
The classic sci-fi film that was featured in Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so as it ends, we've mentioned all of a sudden Ames is like, he attacked me, help. And it's actually a pretty haunting, like the voice coming from, help me, Stella, he's in the house, I'm under the stairs. Yeah. Stella goes and like gets Ames. They turn around and she's like, oh no, who's behind the door? And it is Sam's body that then falls down. And then when like Stella turns around, all of a sudden Ames with a comically deep voice says, you have a bad memory, which is really funny that was what Stella was just like, tisk tisk tisk, which she was writing Stella really hard the entire episode about being forgetful.
About this window that didn't matter.
Yeah, so like then there's a struggle. The Stella like pulls the wig off and we get like a, so there is a thing called, there's a trope, I don't know if it has a name, but there's a trope about when like a character that you presumed was female is revealed to then be male and it is treated as if it's like a horror, you know, and it's shot off, which, you know, like Crying Game or specifically like Ace Ventura, the first Ace Ventura, when like that is a trope that is like, you know, we're supposed to be horrified at, you know, male presenting body.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And female presenting bodies being all blurry. And that's very much what this is, because when the wig is taken off, it reveals his slicked back hair, and it's shot as if it's like, oh no, he has man hair. And then the wild one, though, is the gratuitous shot. All of a sudden, like, she like rip off her shirt, and we see just like almost as if he had shaved the collarbone area that would be exposed, and then just hair, just lots of just like hairy like pecs.
I gotta say that there's a story that I read about him that actually kind of ties into this, is that he was doing a show with a review. And at the end of the show, he took his wig off and he bowed. And there were two women in the audience who supposedly said, oh, that poor woman, she's bald.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like whoever was writing the script was like, no, you can't just show that he's bald. You have to show like he's actually doesn't have breasts. He's a man. Like it's the extra.
Yeah, it also doesn't work because I feel like as Ames, he is clearly wearing a bra that is padded, because he has breasts, and so it is wild that they don't show that. But you know, I mean, showing a woman's bra on TV 1965, no go. A man's bra? Oh boy, I don't think so.
And one that you can pull off completely from the front.
Yeah, wow, god, I would love that. Why are they connecting to the back? I don't understand it. Putting them on is annoying.
I don't know.
I did notice that his lashes were very pretty when he was strangling Stella as the silhouette. I was like, oh, those are fierce. So like the ending of it is that like Stella is basically like stripping Ames down, revealing the person underneath. And he says, the nurse, the strangler says, like, such a pretty nurse. And then, I mean, Stella dies. Like, that's the end of the episode. And then Hitchcock has a joke that says, if you want to know more about Nurse Betty Ames, he later tried to throttle a nurse who was a policeman in disguise, which I guess is his way of saying, like, he's in jail.
That was something that Hitch would do on the show, too, is that he'd kind of, like, wink to the audience and be like, don't worry, it all worked out. The killer was caught.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what this was.
But, man, that body count kept on getting racked up. So, Craig Jones, T.C. Jones. I'll say, like, born October 26, 1920 in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He went to school. Okay, so first of all like the internet is like he studied 2 years in like seminary, like to be a priest.
Yeah.
Which is okay, so we should count clues that he's a homosexual. So when he was drafted, because I did find his draft card, which he signed his name Tomas for some reason, with no H. He at the time he was 21 when he was drafted. So this is 1941. He was a student at Carnegie Institute of Technology. So he must have gone to seminary after that. And then he was discharged in 1943, and I don't know if it was
probably the seminary first, and then that, because I don't know the exact date, but he was in the Provincetown Players. mm-hmm. which was a very famous theater troupe. Now, they had their kind of like big heyday in the 1920s and the 1920s and 30s, and had kind of like that wave had kind of ended, but they were still going with shows. So he was in, I believe it was the E.E. Cummings play Him in the mid to late 1940s. So that was Provincetown Players, still a big name, doing an E.E. Cummings play. And that's where he said he played a female character for the first time, was in the play Him.
So
I want to say that probably didn't go straight from the Army to Carnegie Institute of Technology and then into the theater. I want to say it was probably.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
And so he gets to Broadway. So he has two Broadway credits in like the mid, like 1940, like right after he gets back from the war, where he's basically
and one of them's
like,
right up your alley.
He's an ensemble player. Then he's a dancer. Are you talking about New Faces of 56 or?
I'm talking about New Faces of 56.
Which is the thing that Paul Lynn did that got him famous, I think before. I think he was New Faces of 54. So basically, like, there was an annual, like, Broadway New Faces that was kind of just like a incubator for up-and-coming talent, and they would basically just do a variety show where everyone just, like, did their own things. Now, did you see who he was in New Faces of 56 with?
No.
Billy Hayes, who are going to play Witchy Poo on and Maggie Smith.
Really?
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So, wild. I mean, TC Jones work.
Directed by Paul Lynn, who then cast Billy Hayes in the Paul Lynn Halloween special.
Which is essential reading. Or essential viewing. So he does drag in that, and that is where the story of him taking off his wig at the end and the ladies being like, oh, that poor woman. Comes from like reports of New Faces 56, I do believe. And then his own show. He got his own Broadway show after that, called Mask and Gown, that only ran for a month, September to October 57. Which, you know, hey, still had it. But then it toured, so he still got to use it. Yep. The Playbill, which I kind of want to get a copy of. There's a section of it, and this is something to talk about. It's, you know, I mean, this is a drag show on Broadway in 1957. But the Playbill, like, you know, in the inside where it's like showing behind the scenes and photos of him. One of the sections is titled, Never Underestimate the Power of a Man. And that's titling a page of just photos of him, like, in like women's underwear and like combing wigs and stuff. You know what?
You should get that. Try to find that
it.
If you can.
I want it. But this, so like the This Is the Army playbills from when it was on Broadway 10 years before this is the same thing, because like the whole, like, that is a lot of that was drag, and a lot of that was them. Right. The Broadway playbills for This Is the Army were heavy on, they listed like the names of the soldiers, what weapons they were skilled in, and just like stuff like, and all the fonts were like very macho. It was very much like, yeah, they're singing and dancing, and some of them are wearing dresses, but, you know, they can kill a man. You know, they really, well, the whole thing was like, they really wish they were fighting. Like, that's the undercurrent. Very weird.
While they're entertaining you, they're really dreaming about the battlefield. So
yes.
Think about that.
Yeah.
When you pan this show,
it's very wild.
I found out that he moved to Miami after the words and joined the Jewel Box Review, which was for the time a very well-known drag show that moved up to New York.
Oh.
So I believe that he followed that, and there's a pictorial of just behind the scenes and on stage with the Jewel Box Review, REVUE, that was big in Miami, and I'm looking for it. It started in 1932 and then moved up to New York in 1962. So around kind of the later years, he was with that, and I believe he moved with it, and I think I think that's kind of where that part of his career ended, because that was, it was a big drag show.
Yeah, so, like Tootsie Jones is widely considered, at least in like all the newspaper articles that I was finding from like the 50s and 60s, they all frame it as if like, we all thought female impersonation was out of fashion, and then Tootsie Jones brought it back. Like, he was considered to be, from what I'm assuming, the most prominent female impersonator of this time period.
One of them, that's for sure.
Yeah. So like,
he did characters that people recognized. He did Judy Garland.
Oh, Tallulah Bankhead.
And he put these together into a show, and that show eventually got recorded and released as an album.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't write down the name because I'm an idiot.
So I'm trying to find now. Oh my god, come on.
But then he abandons the East Coast.
Yes.
So what are you looking for?
Yeah. No, well, so let's talk about the wife, because this is where things get interesting. So
Connie Dixon.
So born Caroline Suzanne Dixon because I found out all sorts of information about her that is, you can find if you have an Ancestry.com account. She's a year younger than him, which I think if you see photos of her does not compute. But also Tootsie Jones. So what he looks like out of drag is, imagine if Uncle Fester was cute. Like, he's got this round, bald head, you know, like.
He's kind of got like chipmunk cheeks.
Yeah.
He's kind of like he's a chipper dude.
Yeah. But he's like stocky. He's 5'8", apparently. I saw it somewhere.
Whereas I have big eyes, he has kind of smaller eyes.
Yeah, like, so Caroline Suzanne Dixon. So they meet. So how they met is wild. And in 1953, Caroline Dixon owned I have a whole lot of articles about this. She owned a hair and like a wig studio and hair salon in the Polk district of San Francisco, which before the Castro was the gay district, the Polk, Polk Street was the gay district in the 1950s. So that's reason number two.
This wasn't her first career. Her first career was professional fencer.
Yeah.
And then she retired from that and started this wig supply store.
So on what day is this? On May 16th, 1962, the St. Petersburg Times wrote this article titled "Meet TC and His Mrs. Connie" by Nancy Osgood of the Times staff. So that Saturday in 1952, the business week was drawing to a close. Connie Dixon, former Miami model and three-time Florida women's fencing champion, was preparing to leave her San Francisco beauty shop. At that moment, in walked a distraught man. "I'm told you can do something about this mop of a wig. I certainly hope so," he said. "It's driving me crazy." Connie couldn't believe her eyes. Her caller was Tootsie Jones, the female impersonator whose act she tried many times to see in her hometown, always without success. She agreed to dress the wig that Saturday night. Monday, she and T met at a party. Tuesday, she went to see his performance. Wednesday, they dated. A few weeks later, they were wed. Since then, Connie and TC have worked side by side, as they are doing now at blah, 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 blah. So, okay.
I'm looking for pictures of her, and the only one I found is one of her styling his wig.
Yes, that's what I'm looking at.
And his Mrs. Connie.
Where he looks here, let me share my screen, because then maybe it'll show up in the video.
Ooh, that'd be a good idea. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yeah, how do I do this? Oh my god, okay, there it is. Jesus. Share advanced. One participant can share at a time. Okay, cool. Share screen. There we go. And boom.
There we go. I can see it. I can see it. I hope that other people can.
So
there's TC. Connie.
I would not buy that she is a year younger than him. I mean, I don't have any information that her birthday is a lie, but she looks very much like very Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. So he's in his 30s. She's in her 30s.
Yeah. This is 62. So they are 42 and 41.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah. So there's that. And then here's an article from 1972. So he died in 70-71. So this is her as a widow. So I'm just saying, I think, okay. Well, let's just, yeah. So here's photos of her, which is, so you know what her career is after he dies?
No.
She goes into making health food for pets.
Well.
Yeah. But yeah, there she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they never had children. They were married from 1952 until his death. So they're married for almost 20 years. Never had kids. She says in this article, she was his manager. She like managed his career. And after he died, yeah, she wanted to keep on being in management positions. But in 1972, that's sexism was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So she changed on her resume. She changed her name to C.S. Jones instead of Connie to get jobs. So I don't know. Like, I also, she looks kind of butch. See, this is where, you know, you can't judge someone's sexuality just going off of their looks. You definitely can't. I can't. No.
I wouldn't even try.
No. I mean, a lavender marriage makes a lot of sense to me, is that she was a lesbian, he was a gay man. They probably got married in order to like move through the world. Because as a female impersonator, I noticed a lot of the articles about like T.C. Jones is coming to town always mention, and he's bringing his wife, Connie. Connie styles his wigs. Like, oh no, there was a really, really good, let me find it. There was a just really stupid. Okay, here's this. This is a clip from, he's coming to do a show in like Concord, California. TC and his wife, the former Connie Dixon, make their home in San Francisco when not on tour. Mrs. Jones supervises her husband's extensive wardrobe and wigs, proving that even female impersonators need the real feminine touch when it comes to clothes. Do they? Do they? Why?
So, well, like, times that, were what they were.
It does feel like if you wanted to be a drag queen in the 50s and 60s and not and survive, you would probably behoove you to have a wife that can be your beard in articles like this, so that people won't protest the female impersonator because it's a homosexual coming to town. He's bringing his wife. Yeah. Like, that's,
he's bringing his, like, mentioned that in the article.
Yeah, I'm glad, and they all do.
Like, there are articles about it. This is not something that you'd necessarily see in every, like, you know, paper. But yeah, hey, T.C. Jones coming to town.
Well, but I think back then,
little bankhead,
you know, before the internet. So this is, so after this episode of Hitchcock airs on March 26, 1965, this is syndicated in a lot of papers. Stephen H. Scheuer answers a question. Who played the part of the nurse on the Alfred Hitchcock drama titled An Unlocked Door, which is an unlocked window? I know it was a man with a woman's wig. The show was finished for over 2 hours and my nerves were still unsettled. I'm an avid Hitchcock fan and have been surprised by some of his endings, but this show was the first that left me completely unnerved. Signed, A.A. from Memphis, Tennessee. The answer is...
A. Milne, the creator of Winnie the Pooh?
So the answer is, many fans have written our mailbag about the surprise ending of the drama titled An Unlocked Door. Oh my God, Stephen, people are coming to you for accurate advice and you're not giving them the right title. They don't have the internet yet. That's why they're writing you. Okay. An Unlocked Door. It will probably rank with Hitchcock's more memorable TV hours. T.C. Jones, who is one of the foremost and tasteful female impersonators in show business, played the role of the killer nurse. The word tasteful there is...
Oh, yeah. Well, It also kills me that they're like, oh, this is Hitchcock's thing. Hitchcock did not direct this, write this, or do anything except to show up. He directed a total of 18 episodes between Hitchcock Presents and Hour, and only one of those episodes was Hitchcock Hour. Everything else, 17 episodes were Alfred Hitchcock Presents. He was like doing his own thing, and he'd show up and he'd record literally 4 minutes worth of shtick per episode.
And it is shtick. And then it is weird how funny he is. Like, he has a very comedic character. It's just really unsettling, and it's weird.
Because he's playing off himself.
Yeah.
He's playing off like, oh, Alfred Hitchcock must live with guns and knives and bombs and poison, because that's who he is. But he's playing against that, being like, I'm also droll and British and funny.
You don't expect
that to come out of me.
Also in this 1962 profile, so it's an interview with T.C. Jones, and he says, he studied 2 years for the ministry when he was like 17 to 19, and then he goes to Carnegie Tech and then the Army. But he says, as I look back, I'm convinced it was an emotional thing, that it was the drama of the Bible that interested me. Which is like, I got into the ministry because of the drama. Which is a pretty gay reason to get into the ministry.
I'm looking up the drama of the Bible and not finding anything very interesting.
Boom. So
the question is, I mean, I was reading like an article that was just talking about drag queens and their sexualities, and their reading of it was, he never gave any indication in any interviews, private or public, that he was gay or was not. It still remains a mystery. I think you've done some sleuthing, but this one might end up a mystery.
Until I write his biography and I really do the deep dive. But I mean, I do think that, like, you know, the clues of, you know, ministry, getting into the ministry for the drama, doing drag, marrying a woman that you like, like a month after meeting her, and she's all of a sudden your manager and does your wigs, in the gay district of San Francisco. And then never have children. Like, so there is a, you know, we'll never know for sure because of the closet. But there's also, you know, who knows how the way that we in modern 21st century look at sexuality and gender identity and stuff is so, like, leaps and bounds more advanced, complicated than it was back then. Like, a lot of the terminology and stuff that we use now, like, just didn't even have. Like, who knows? You know, he might have preferred female pronouns, but didn't know that he could ask for that. You know, like, that's...
Yeah.
Or he might have, like, you know, I can't say that he didn't love Connie. He probably did love Connie. But did he have sex with men, too? Like, but did that make him gay in his eyes? Who knows? You know, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's complicated, but I will say gay icon.
Yeah, let's come right out and say it.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
I
think as far as like any gay performer looking to the past, or I'm sorry, any drag performer looking to the past, you could have couldn't do much better than T.C. Jones, who did drag on Broadway, had his own Broadway drag show.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Worked with Paul Lynde and Maggie Smith on Broadway, had a successful review to the point where, you know, he's doing a show and it gets mentioned in the paper, multiple papers, and had an album of his show recorded and is available now. Like, that's pretty good as far as a career goes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I will also point out that I did find out that in 1954, Miss Carolyn Dixon Jones, owner of a San Francisco beauty shop at 1653 Polk Street, today awaits sentence on her guilty plea to charges of withholding $42 of employees' unemployment insurance contributions without paying money to the state. She will be sentenced July 15th.
The dark side of
criminal.
Fame.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, if
I don't know what her sentence was, but
I'm not going to say that you need to watch this particular episode, but if you do want to see T.C. Jones in action, in something that is really entertaining, he's in the movie Head with the monkeys.
All right.
And in drag and out.
Okay, I need to like track that down then.
If you check it out, he's in it. Also, Frank Zappa's in it. Also, some great music. Written by Jack Nicholson. Fantastic.
Yeah, I was like, Jack Nicholson was involved. Yeah. Are you ready for more must-have facts about this specific episode of television and not just
I thought we covered everything,
Jesus Christ,
but let's go.
No, man. So the ratings were bad. This was one of the last episodes of Alfred Hitchcock after its 10-year run. It was announced in the papers literally this like week that this aired that the show was canceled. So this was it. The top five shows of the week, though, were number five, Bewitched, number four, Andy Griffith, number three, a tie between The Fugitive and Gilligan's Island, two, Gomer Pyle, and number one, Bonanza, which is it's a healthy lineup.
They're all shows that people remember now.
Yeah. 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 The number, the CBS's, no, NBC's, god damn it, hold on, my thing is just, my computer's fritzed out. I didn't write it down. The NBC had a lineup, and man, it was great.
I'll take your word for it.
So what are you watching? Because these are some choices. On ABC, we've got The Dinosaur Special with Harry Belafonte, a musical salute to the Peace Corps featuring songs of Midi Nation and a new song of dedication. Sergeant Shriver and a group of volunteers take part in our. So that on NBC, we've got Alfred Hitchcock Hour, an unlocked window. Bitch, it was written in the fucking newspapers and people are out there calling an unlocked door. No, it's an unlocked window.
At the end of the episode, they say T.C. Jones as Nurse Betty Ames. So, like, yeah.
Come on.
It's your fault for not memorizing the credits to a show that you saw months ago. Come on, people.
A nurse spends a terrifying night in an isolated house with her bedridden patient while a homicidal maniac is loose in the area. Parentheses, surprise ending and mystery guest star caused Hitch to keep filming closed as a top secret project. So, like, that's teasing.
Hitch didn't record this.
No, he did not do anything with this. And then on CBS, the CBS News special. Oh my god, Siri. Go away. Okay. On CBS, the CBS News special, an essay on bridges. A look at various types of bridges from Rome to Bayonne based on the premise that bridges are the closest man has come to attaining a state of perfection. a Dinosaur special, a terrifying episode of Alfred Hitchcock Hour, which was named the best bed of the night in papers all across the country. Like this episode actually got a lot of good press. Essay on bridges.
I don't know. This is a tough one. I did see that a couple places that this was one of the highlights of the third season. Yeah. This is one of the better episodes and better remembered episodes of the third season. I'm probably going to have to watch Dinosaur because I like Harry Belafonte. I might also turn off after he sings a song or two.
And if he's just going to sing Sergeant Shriver.
Like, if he's just gonna sing Deo, I'm like, okay, we've heard that one before. But you know what? This is a tough one because the bridge is, I don't know.
An essay on
I don't
bridges.
Know where you could go with that. An essay on bridges the closest man has come to perfection.
To perfection. To attaining a state of perfection. I don't know what the hell that means. I just thought, so what the lead in for Hitchcock, I do believe, was Andy Williams' show Broadcast in Color, because this is the last season where the next season is where the transition to color happens. Yeah. And so I'm wondering if Hitchcock was canceled because doing an hour long Hitchcock show in color is just not worth it. It wasn't worth it with the ratings it's getting. Because I can imagine that would be because color was expensive.
And they didn't, Hitch didn't need this. Hitch was making his own films. He'd been a director for 30 years already when this series started.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hedge my bets and say Dinah Shore until Harry Belafonte is done. Then I might switch over to Bridges.
Nerd. Man, I am watching Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and man, I'm going to be throwing a party for it. Who knows? People are going to be coming over.
You don't know, because it's a hidden ending. It's a secret ending.
I'm like, everybody, because, okay, so to tell you the kind of person I am, there was an episode of ER and when I was in college where they were touting it as someone is dying, because this is season 10 or 12 or something. And so we had a party, six or seven of us all went over. We all took bets on who was going to die. And then it was Paul McCrane, who had a helicopter fall on him. So I would probably throw a party for this. On IMDb. On IMDb, 839 Hitch heads gave this an 8.5 out of 10. Would you go higher, lower?
Not knowing a lot about the rest of the series, I would say I'd probably go a little bit lower with it. There were a couple plot holes about the things where anytime that the killer's voice was heard, but Nurse Ames was in a different room, that kind of ruined it for me. But I don't know if this was one of the better episodes. I can't imagine what the worst episodes of Hitchcock were, but it was pretty good.
I would give this an 8.7. I would go even higher. If it's got a good, if it's got the reputation that it has, that number should be higher.
Yeah, I'd probably go high sevens, but maybe not 8.7. That's a bit much.
Honestly, when that ending happened, aside from, I do not know, they dubbed that, was, I can't believe that was T.C. Jones's voice. That dubbed voice was so bad, but just shocking. Just the fact that they ended it with the lead character just getting strangled to death. And it's hi.
Yeah.
I was
by a character that has been stripped down to the waist.
Yeah. Wild.
Pretty much.
So
that's a weird one. I don't know. That's not something you'd see on the Dinah Shore Hour.
No, or the Bridges. Although I don't know what's going on with those Bridges trolls.
They might have been really hot. You don't know.
Who had the must-see performance in this episode?
Louise Latham as Maud.
Yeah, I'm sorry, TC.
I'm sorry. The bonkers, sort of kind of drunk person who just kind of blabs out all the people that got murdered. It's gonna be Maud,
and honestly everyone gets a lot of screen time in this, so Maud is in it a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't talk about when she overhears the killer, she grabs that plank of wood and just starts walking around trying to find it.
Yeah, right. there are three main characters in this. There's Stella, Nurse Ames, and Maud. The patient is asleep for most of it. Sam leaves, and that's it. It's really the three of those actors carrying this series, this show.
And they try to knock her out because she just can't sleep and she's freaking out. And they're knock me out, babe. It was really great. She's great. Must other people see this episode?
I'm going to say no, because it's hard to get people to watch an hour long episode of something that, I don't know, doesn't really lead to anything. I would say that for the T.C. Jones performance, probably yes, because it's a really good performance.
And it's cool to see It's cool to see like Dragon 1965. I think you can probably skim through it and then watch the ending, because that's the thing that's the most problematic and interesting, I guess.
I think that's a good way of doing it. I don't think when we ask this question, we don't usually say, oh, you can, you know, fast forward through it and speed up through it. I think that an hour long Alfred Hitchcock Presents is a time commitment.
Although, Alfred Hitchcock, or if you like classic like suspense, I do think watch the whole thing, because it was fun. And there are really good episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. I can't remember. I cannot remember any of them, but I'm pretty sure I've written a list about them. What I was surprised to find out, though, is it is all thrillers and no like sci-fi. Like, there are very, very, very few that involve like a monster or an alien or something. Like,
no, and probably Hitchcock under 10 really did that.
Yeah.
Hitchcock didn't do that. His movie, if you think about his movies, they're murders, they're crimes, they're suspense. There's. Yeah.
Pretty people doing bad things, ugly things.
Yeah, psychological torture, like Gaslight and Rebecca, and like, you know.
Oh, Becky. But... Rebecca Katsopoulos. that does it. Where can people find you on the internet if they want to share their favorite memories of T.C. Jones?
Check me out on EthanK55 EthanK55 on Instagram. That's where I post pictures. That's where I posted a picture today. Megan and I went to the Sparta Cemetery in Ossining, New York, to see the grave of the Leather Man.
Ooh, daddy. Which we learned from about. The Village People.
The only person I've seen from the Village People is the cowboy. And I saw him at a convention. He's smiled and he was very nice. But the Leather Man was we watched an episode of Mystery Files, which is on Watcher TV on YouTube. And he was a tramp that walked around the Northeast in the late 1800s and wore 60 pounds of leather clothing. And he died. Who he was a mystery, and where he was buried was a mystery. And his grave now is in Sparta Cemetery. So I posted a couple pictures of the Leather Man's grave. That was a long story. Long walk for a ham sandwich.
Content, baby.
How are you doing, Brett?
Oh, where you know, you people can follow me on the internet at Brett White, on Twitter and Instagram. You can also follow my drag journey, especially during Pride Month, at Barbara Hartley on Instagram. And follow Must Have Seen TV, like watch things on YouTube, please. It'd be nice. And leave comments, leave reviews, leave literally everything. Tell us your dreams, your hopes, your fantasies. And please rate review.
Like,
I already said
t-shirts or not.
Yeah.
If you like the t-shirts that I'm wearing, I'll change them up.
Yes. And, or take requests.
Ooh, maybe I will.
Next time, we'll be journeying into the 1970s to see what Pride was like then. We'll add, which means we'll actually get into characters who are homosexual. Because we've now spent two episodes. But it's still, it's because there really weren't any on television.
And we are, even if this goes past June, we are going to get through the 70s, 80s, and 90s. That is what's going to happen. So even if the 90s episode ends up a little bit in July,
who knows?
We're going to get through all the decades.
Because this is interesting, because it's open to everything, important. Baby. Maybe we'll do, I've talked a lot about sitcoms. Maybe I'll find a drama or a news special or something weird. Let's keep it weird stuff,
keep
baby.
It weird.
Keep Austin weird. Baby. Hey, babe. So thanks to Acast for hosting this podcast. And we'll see y'all next time. Our Must Have Seen TV. Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.